Welcome to The B-Sides, a podcast for progressives who love pop music. We're your hosts. I'm Hannah.
I'm Mimi.
And I'm Becky. Tune in for new episodes every other Wednesday to hear our conversations on pop's place in our world.
And the music you should put in your ears to fuel your reckoning with the trash fires all around us. Thanks for tuning in. Here we go.
Welcome to The B-Sides.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Welcome to The B-Sides. The B-Sides is a podcast for progressive people who have a complicated relationship with the Kardashian-Jenner clan. That's certainly me, former Kylie lipstick hoarder myself. I don't know if that describes you, Becky and Mimi.
No, but I do like them. Although the Balenciaga stuff is also putting them in a bad PR state right now.
Oh, right. I'm not really following that. What is there? There is... Balenciaga had a really bad ad.
Yeah, they had a bad ad that had like children with like BDSM teddy bears. And then when you zoomed in one of the papers, it was this like Supreme Court case about child pornography. And everyone was like, what the fuck? And everyone was calling on Kim to like, say she's going to stop working with them because it's like one of her number one brands. And she put out this like, she waited a really long time and put out a really like wishy-washy statement.
Okay, wow. This is not how I expected to open this episode.
Sorry, I'm not on topic fully.
I love it. We're getting right into it. There's no shortage of horrible things to talk about. But we are so glad you're here. So today, what we are going to talk about is not the Balenciaga campaign, although it might come up again as all these things are relevant. What we're going to talk about is the tragedy that happened at AstroWorld over a year ago. So there are lessons from AstroWorld. If you know what happened, if you didn't, either way, there are lessons from the tragedy that happened at this music festival headlined by Travis Scott. Lessons for us to take about media literacy that we really want to illuminate, which we think will make us all smarter consumers of media and of news. So that's what we're here to do today. So subscribe if you haven't already. We come out every other Wednesday. And make sure to open up the description of this episode to find other ways you can join this internet home. So we do have a few quick announcements. First, if you want to support the show, one way you could do that that we so appreciate is on Patreon. For $5 a month, you receive one playlist a month. You receive behind the scenes content and one bonus mini episode a month.
So we want to say a nice thank you to Maria L, Emily K, Hannah M, Celeste L, Indigo TH, Hannah B, Brett S, Margot B, Katie S, and Jordan W. You are our heroes.
And then a hero comes along. Indeed. Join us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/thebsides.
Second, we now have a merch storefront on TeePublic. Link is in the show notes.
And lastly, join us on the internet beyond what we've just talked about. We love that this podcast is more than just a podcast. It's a home on the internet for progressives who love pop. Link to join our group chat, aka our Discord, is in the show notes. Join us on Instagram, which is where we probably speak directly with you all the most, especially Hannah. Thank you, Hannah. And we also have a TikTok, Twitter, and a Facebook too, all linked below.
Although I don't know if we're going to have a TikTok for much longer because I do not like the comments I got on my most recent TikTok. And I don't know if I'll ever make one again.
Not repeat. You always say that.
No, this was the worst. This was bad. The Swifties, of which until this week, I consider myself one, are like kind of, they're really hurting my feelings.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wait till you meet the Kardashian stans that will come after you too about this.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm never posting on TikTok again. I really, I don't know, man.
Yeah. If you're what I said to Hannah and I said, and I meant that like, I wasn't just saying this to be a supportive friend. If you're one of the Swifties who tried to attack her on that video, just know that I really think that you lack discernment and you need to learn it. And also, maybe you need to get a life. I don't know your life, but there's a chance that if you are commenting on a stranger's video and being rude and it has nothing to do with you, you might need to get a life.
What was the video?
As I'm going to tell it to you, I'm going to realize how stupid it was to even put up. Like, I shouldn't have done it, but I thought that it was funny.
Is this the same Gaylor one that from last time?
No, that one I took down right away and I understood why. This was, I was like cheekily, it wasn't even that funny. I was cheekily giving Taylor Swift some like deltas, some like room for improvement. Oh,
I saw this. Yeah.
And people did not like that. And I'm like, guys, it's not a big deal. I am not a real person. She is not harmed by me being silly about some of the lines that I thought were a little stupid in the album. And people are just like people are being like, is this satire? Because if so, like, because if not, and I'm like, is your comment satire? Like, is this real? Are you being real right now?
Yeah. It's saying that everything Taylor Swift does is perfect. Is that satire? Because it should be. Right. And it's saying that every lyric is perfect when in fact there is a lyric about being proud of snitching to the FBI. Is that a perfect lyric to you? Maybe you need to do an audit of your life. Maybe you need to get a life. Read a book.
And I think Taylor Swift said it perfectly, which I've quoted before on this podcast, where she said, I'm just too soft for all of it. Like, no one's being that mean to me. No one's like doxing me. No one's threatening me. People have gone through much worse on the internet. But just to have a lot of people call you stupid, it really,
yeah, it fucks
you
up.
Really is hurting my feelings.
Mm, yeah. I'm sorry.
It's okay. But I do need to repair my relationship with Taylor Swift herself. Like, I was listening to Midnight today and I was like, fuck this album. Fuck these people. Like, I don't want to go to this concert anymore. Just kidding. I want to go to the concert, but I am. That's a long way of saying follow us on TikTok, but also be nice.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to gather with these people, but I do want to see her show. But yeah, I don't want to gather.
Today, we're going to talk about gathering.
Gathering. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which can be so wonderful or so bad.
Yeah.
Let's get into it. Okay. So. Today we're going to talk about Astroworld, and we're going to do a little bit of an overview at the top. This is a really tough topic, so I want to give a trigger warning right now for death. We're talking about death, people who died, and a lot of just really hard things to hear. We're not going to go into all of the very gory details that exist on the internet if you want. And in some ways it's important to get the full picture, but we're not going to go into some of those details. I also just want to say that this episode is a bit of a different tone for us. It's pretty serious. The topic is pretty serious. We promise we're going to get back to big sillies very soon because that's where we really thrive. Okay. So I want to share a quote to start, and then I'll tell you the four parts that this episode is going to entail, and then we will dive in. So this is a quote from G. Keith Still. Still is a visiting professor of crowd science, fascinating, at the University of Suffolk in England. And this was in an article about Astroworld in the Daily Saba. And he said, safety has no profit, so it tends to be the last thing in the budget. Mm-hmm. I don't know, that hit me like a ton of bricks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, there is safety, and it's safety for the performers, and that has a budget.
That does have a budget. Yep. It's so true. Like, yeah, it's really interesting to see, you know, where artists and where music companies decide to like put their safety and security budget and what they don't choose to prioritize.
Yeah, because the artists are irreplaceable in a way and are the ones making them all the money. And that capitalism
was dark, man.
We read last time.
Yes.
You know, it's just applying to a lot of things.
Yes. Go back to episode 47 to check out that dark capitalist. A quote about capitalism that Mimi shared with us.
Yeah, it's in the show notes there too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyway.
So our episode has four parts. Part one is our overview. Part two is Travis Scott and the Kardashian Jenner Cruise brand fallout. Part three is about moshing and safety in large groups. And part four are an overview of the design flaws that contributed to the tragedy. Because a lot of things had to go wrong. And if even like one of those things or two of those things weren't present, we wouldn't have had the loss of life that we did. So let's do it. Let's start with part one, the overview.
Yeah. So let's get some basic facts out here. They're hard to hear, but let's get on the same page. So when? On November 5th, 2021, the first stage of the 2021 Astroworld Festival. Where? Houston, Texas. What? As Travis Scott took the stage, a crowd crushed surged forward, which resulted in over 300 injured people, 25 hospitalizations, and 10 deaths. The music played for almost 40 minutes after people started dying and the Houston police had declared a mass casualty event.
Who? So this is Travis Scott, the performer, headliner, festival designer, and he is Kylie Jenner's partner, and they share two kids. The names of the people who lost their lives are Franco Patino, 21, John Hilgert, 14, Brianna Rodriguez, 16, Rudy Pena, 23, Danish Baig, 27, Jacob E. Jerenik, 20, Axel Acosta, 21, Madison Dubisky, 23, Barty Shahani, 22, and Ezra Blount, 9. Why? There are a lot of theories aiming to place the blame somewhere. With Travis, with the fans, with the festival, with the police. We aren't going to assign blame, but we are going to explore the many factors that contributed to this moment. Crowd crush is a specific phenomenon that is rare, but when it happens, there are design flaws and human errors behind it. It's important to know that crowd crush doesn't actually happen when massive groups of people are designed in the right way. The key issue isn't crowd numbers, it's crowd density.
Yeah, and what we are not going to do is contribute to critiques of Travis Scott or his fans that are rooted in racism or ageism. Some of the critiques of Travis's response are just thinly veiled stereotypes of Black artists, and some aren't veiled at all. Many of these critiques are about whether or not Travis incites violence through his lyrics and performances. Knocking down rappers for their lyrics is a tale as old as time, and we're not here for it. What we are also not going to do is blame the victims and the people in attendance. The people swarm to the front. People swarm to the front in concerts frequently, and they don't die. There are elements of human decision-making that contribute to a tragedy like this.
Yeah, and I want to explain some more about why this matters, like why we're not going to blame the people who died and their actions. And it's not only out of respect for the people who are dead. That's a huge part of it, but it's not the only reason. It's also because if the culture, if the conversation starts to blame victims, then solutions become designed to ban certain behavior or tamper what people perceive as hooliganism, rather than actually create safe crowd structures and systems. So it's respect, and it's also that there could be like real negative consequences to future festivals if we contribute to a culture of blame of the behavior of the people who died. So if you'll bear with me, I'd like to give an example from sports. Not usually my area of expertise, but this is a story I have heard about and then have done some more research on, and I'd like to share with you all. So in 1989, there was a crowd crush disaster at the Hillsborough Stadium in England, during a soccer semifinal match between Liverpool and Nottingham Forest, which killed 97 people. It's like a lot of people. It injured 766 people. And all of these people were Liverpool soccer fans. So honestly, this tragedy, the 1989 Hillsborough tragedy, is kind of what made me want to talk about Astroworld at all. My husband, Logan, is a huge Liverpool fan. And I know that we have at least one mega Liverpool fan who's also a B-Sides listener. Hi, Brett. Shout out. And the Liverpool soccer community is still to this day deeply, deeply affected by this tragedy. It's like a part of their community. It's a part of their lore. Their jerseys have the number 97 on all of them. So it's a complicated story. I'm going to tell it briefly and reductively just to paint a broad picture and then tell you why it matters for Astroworld. So basically what happened was Liverpool fans, soccer fans are split up into different, like they don't want the fans to clash. So certain fans go here, certain fans go there. Liverpool fans were directed through a very narrow tunnel into like narrow pens. And then there were a bunch of very specific decisions that were created, that were made, that created a massive crowd of people who were smushed and then kept getting smushed against the fences. Part of me wants to tell you more. But honestly, there's like really no way to tell you more without being graphic. So what I will do is I highly recommend episode 294 of My Favorite Murder. I don't always recommend that show, but this episode, they went into how this happened the way it did and the aftermath and all the very specific police, especially and security like staff decisions that went into like why people were forced into a pen. In the moment, something that was very interesting, not to sound too much like Mr. Rogers, but is Mr. Rogers the guy who's like, when there's a tragedy, look for the people who are helping, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So in that moment, Liverpool fans and Nottingham Forest fans alike were doing everything they could to help pull people out of these pens and helping people in the aftermath. And, you know, there was like the Nottingham Forest fans were trying to pull people up and out of these pens. But just one thing that went wrong that day is that police were pushing people back down because they thought that, that these were just like unruly fans trying to climb the stadium seating. So they were pushing people back down. So a lot more happened, as I mentioned, but here's what's happened after. After the fact, the police and the security staff worked with the tabloids, specifically The Sun, which is, you know, a real like British tabloid trash, to push narratives that Liverpool fans made this happen because of like hooliganism. That was the word, like because they were being unruly, because they were just like being crazy. They peddled tons of now proven false stories, like specific stories that are like straight up lies. This was the Thatcher era. Liverpool was a working class and left-leaning town, and The Sun especially took great pleasure in kicking them while they were down. And to this day, opposing fans at Liverpool games will chant always the victims. So like this is like a disrespect that still 97 people died and they're still getting, you know, this kind of vitriol. So not only was that beyond tragic for the people injured and the families of lost loved ones, right? To like have your dead loved ones being disparaged, totally disparaged in the media, it had serious consequences. The biggest one I wanted to share was that in a court battle, the original court battle that kind of came out of this, the jury found all the deaths to be accidental. And it was only in the 2010s, there was finally political will to open an actual inquiry. They like figured out what happened. They got proof of what went wrong that day. And it was only then that not only did so much truth come to light about the decision that led to the tragedy, none of which were made by fans, but also the new jury ruled that all the deaths were in fact unlawful deaths, essentially saying that there were actual people at fault, and then a process of accountability could ensue. So anyway, that's my short sports corner for the day. And what we're thinking about here is, you know, in Astroworld, concert goers' behavior certainly seems like it was a factor that contributed to the night ending badly. But blaming concert goers is not only disrespectful, reductive, and in most cases, downright wrong. It could result in a lack of better planning and in future solutions and in a failure of accountability. So that's why we won't be doing that. All right. Part two, the fallout for Travis Scott. Okay, so it's important to explore how the aftermath of Astroworld did and didn't affect Travis Scott. After Astroworld, the Kardashian-Jenner family really focused on building Travis's image as a caring and very tame father. And you can see this right now in the things that come out about Travis. He's very caring, he's very tame, and he is a dad. That is like the content. Before Astroworld, though, his brand was hype and cool and excess and like collabing with every brand. And he was just this perfect Gen Z millennial cuspy icon. But that brand became seen as one of the very reasons why people died that night. Something that we'll explore a little bit more. But just to say, it's not clear whether or not Travis could see what was happening and how much he knew, although there are many understandable claims that like there's no way he couldn't see how dangerous things were, especially once there were like ambulances driving through the crowd and he should have been able to make sense of the surge that was right in front of him. We'll talk about that a little more. And after the section, also in part three, we're going to share examples of how other artists have taken care of their fans to show like just how different Travis's reaction was. But that's why there needed to be a little bit of a PR fix after this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in Travis's first interview after the incident, he said, quote, "I didn't know the exact details until minutes before the press conference. And even at that moment, you're like, wait, what? People pass out, things happen at concerts, but something like that." He continued, quote, "It's so crazy because I'm that artist too. Anytime you can hear something like that, you want to stop the show. You want to make sure fans get the proper attention they need. Anytime I could see anything like that, I did. I stopped it a couple times just to make sure everybody was okay. And I really just go off the fans' energy as a collective, call and response. I just didn't hear that. You can only help when you can see and whatever you're told. Whenever they tell you to stop, you stop.
Yeah, and whether or not you think that Travis made mistakes that resulted in this tragedy, clearly his brand has been hurt by the fallout. He's lost brand deals and didn't perform for about 6 months after the events. Since he's with Kylie Jenner, we of course have to look at how the Kardashian-Jenner PR machine handled this blow to one of their own. It didn't only affect Travis. Kylie and Kendall came under fire for posting throughout the night, including a video that Kylie had up for a long time in her Instagram stories, where you can clearly see an ambulance in the middle of the crowd. So they had to go into some damage control. And so while Astroworld was happening, they were shooting their new series, their first season of their new series, Kardashians, on Hulu, which Travis is not in. He's not in it. He's obviously talked about, kind of, but more as Kylie's partner. But I don't know if you've ever seen Kardashians on Hulu. You might be bored. And I kind of think that's the point of it. It's not really like E. They're not playing the pranks on each other that they used to. It's more like documentary style. Like, Khloé's trying her best to put on a smile when someone mentions her ex, Tristan, who, that's a whole other side we don't have to go down. Kim, you know, gives a smirk when talking about Pete Davidson, but won't talk about it anymore. And Courtney and Travis are like sucking face the entire time. And Kendall thanks her lucky stars that she doesn't have any kids yet, all while Kris Jenner is playing her best role as momager. And, you know, she's going food shopping with her youngest daughter and her fabulous great mom, Kylie, which is a scene in the first season where they like are like, what do you want to do? Let's go to the grocery store. So they literally go food shopping together.
This does sound a little boring.
Yeah. They're like, oh my God, I haven't been to a grocery store in so long. Anyway, so, and I think this is by design. You're supposed to think that this family is boring. They're moms just like us. Well, you know, also getting to a peek into a life full of glam that is really beyond you or me. And that's to put like that sort of narrative to the world that like family is first.
Right.
So that's why it was super interesting to side of look and see like what they did about Kylie and about Astroworld, because they were filming at the time. So for starters, Astroworld is never discussed in the show. They even filmed on the night of Astroworld. That night, the entire family, minus Kylie and Kendall, who were at Astroworld, were celebrating Kris Jenner's birthday. The party was an important part of the storyline because Kris wrestled with inviting Courtney's ex, Scott, which she ultimately does, and it's awkward, et cetera. Ellen DeGeneres and Portia are there because when you're rich and famous, you can be friends with horrible people too. Doesn't go beyond that. There's so many awkward scenes of this birthday party. And the show never flashes back to Kylie and Kendall at Astroworld, but they do show us a weird out of whack segment of Kendall preparing for her vacation in Miami with Hailey Bieber. And it's like heavily implied that Kendall was in Miami and not at Astroworld during her mom's birthday. She even says in a straight to camera interview, I love these little trips that we do. I'm just sad that I'm missing my mom's birthday. But I'll give her a nice birthday hug on a couple days later, which is a lie. Like paparazzi didn't get her in Miami until a week after Astroworld. They just tried to cover it up by saying that she was in Miami instead of addressing Astroworld at the time. So clearly the show knew that they didn't want to touch us with a 10-foot pole. And I agree with many fans, you know, who are glad they didn't feature Astroworld as a plot in the show, just because of they probably would not have done it well, clearly. But they did have a prime opportunity to address the victims and their families, to apologize, to take ownership, even like a black card with white writing at the end with the names of the victims to say like, we honor, or, you know, help or something. But they didn't. To the Kardashians, Astroworld was just another PR challenge they have to face, much like Kim's divorce, Kris Humphries, and even the sex video that started it all. It was not a matter of life and death, but it was just a matter of preserving their image.
It's fascinating that the quote unquote cover up of Kendall implying that she's in Miami is so easy to find fault in, because it's like two things that had very specific dates. Like Kris Jenner's birthday is a very specific date, and Astroworld is a very specific date. Like, you can just Google it, but I think they're counting on people mostly to not. And I bet a lot of people don't.
And I think, I mean, I think a lot of people knew about Astro World, but I think if you're a casual viewer on it, like I watched that first season, I didn't know the 2 and 2 dates were the same.
Of course.
Because they don't mention it. They're leaving out a big part of history. But if you don't know that and you're watching it, like, you don't know.
Yeah, they're just counting on people to not Google it. It kind of reminds me of like memoir style writing. Stay with me for a second, which is that like when you like memoirists will say that it's less about writing what happened and more about like writing something that will get the reader to know how they want them to feel and convey it. Now that is like much less evil most of the time than what we're talking about. Like usually that's a good thing. This is them being like, this is what's true. This is my truth, even though this is not the truth and you could easily Google it. So just like, don't do that, you know?
Right. A very cynical and like unfair take, but that's comes to mind when you say that is like, it is more true for them that they didn't care about it.
Yeah. My truth is that this doesn't matter. And actually what matters more than all this is our image. And that is the truth now.
Yeah.
But it clearly did matter to them because they went out of their way to cut it out.
Well, right? It matters. So, well, they know that it matters to other people.
Yeah.
But like it matters, but it's like devoid of any morality for them, you know? Yeah. So in the few months after Astroworld, Kylie and Travis laid very low on social media and in public. Then Travis showed up more and more on Kylie's Instagram and TikToks, and Kylie, Travis, and their daughter Stormy were showing up at events as a family more than ever before. Kylie shares TikToks of Stormy and Travis being cute together more and more, and now he's a father of two. The Kardashian-Jenner family are PR geniuses, especially Chris, and none of this is accidental. And I think it's kind of predictable, right? Mm-hmm. Like, definitely. What else are you going to do?
Definitely. There was a tweet that, of course, I didn't keep it open on my tabs. Otherwise, I would link it in the show notes. If I can find it, I'll put it in there. That was like immediately after Astroworld. It was like, this is what Travis is going to do. He's going to come up with a statement. He's going to pay for the funeral of the victims. He's then going to do nothing for 6 months and then reemerge as like a wholesome father. And like, that's exactly what happened. It's perfect. And it's exactly what happened. And it's just a reminder that like, again, yes, none of this is accidental. They have like very smart professionals making sure that the brand is saved. That's crazy with a K. Anyway, on that stupid joke, let's take a quick break. We will be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, and we're back. Part 3, moshing. So before Astroworld, Travis's concerts were known for aggressive mosh pits that were definitely egged on by Travis. He loved them, and lots of just like fun and kind of crazy and definitely dangerous activities by the concert goers. So Mimi, can you tell us how mosh pits usually work to protect the people who are involved in them?
I would love to. Okay, so shortly after Astroworld, there were a lot of, it seems mostly young people, basically saying that a mosh pit is a mosh pit and these things happen. Sometimes there are casualties. And while it's true that overcrowded crowds are incredibly dangerous, as we've been talking about, that's not inherently tied to moshing. It's misguided to say that moshing so broadly is why Astroworld ended in tragedy. Moshing itself is really sort of a way to rage in an assigned area, which I actually think is cool, even if it's not my thing. And it's worth mentioning here, not only because that take is misguided, but because we think it's important to stand up for the ways people enjoy the specific music they love without causing harm. And that includes this. So we want to share a relevant quote from a Rolling Stone article by Jeff Ihaza that Hannah pulled, and it was published in the aftermath of Astroworld. And it's called "The Travis Scott Brand Wasn't Built for This." And here he's talking about Travis Scott concerts and mosh pits, which Hannah just mentioned. So, quote, "His concerts are notorious for aggressive mosh pits, which are often egged on by the rapper himself. Except, unlike the punk and hardcore scenes where mosh pits thrive, the rage Scott encourages at his show is ultimately hollow. It's why many firsthand accounts of the events at Astroworld describe an audience seemingly unconcerned with humanity. In videos, you can see attendees dancing on top of ambulance trucks in the crowd. None of it seemed real, and why would it?" Okay, so here's the deal. This tragedy was hugely structural and preventable, and I don't want to put blame on the crowd. I think it's important that Hannah said that up front. But mosh pits can actually be safe and enjoyable and even cathartic with people who sort of know what they're doing all across the board, from the crowd to security to the artists. So it's basically organized chaos in the truest sense. But all of those good things about mosh pits are predicated on another good thing, etiquette. The punk rock and metal communities are great at this, because they basically invented and perfected it a few decades ago with care and purpose and humanity in mind. So broadly speaking, mosh pits at metal shows, let's say, are probably the safest of all because of that, because people sort of like know and abide by the rules. So here's some of the etiquette or protocols that people in these communities tend to know and abide by to keep everyone safe at the show and absolutely not trampled on or otherwise crushed. Really, each of these is part of the golden rule: treat others how you want to be treated. In other words, look out for each other. Okay, so here are some of the specifics. The mosh pit stays in the mosh pit. If you're not in it, don't just start like throwing yourself into other people, and don't involve people who don't want to be involved. There's a designated area for that. Know your strength and be aware of how you could hurt those around you, especially people who are smaller than you. And along those same lines of like thinking about what your body is doing, don't elbow anyone, shoulders only when you sort of like bump into people. If someone falls, moshers around them are supposed to immediately help pick them up. Like that's your responsibility as someone around them. If someone wants to leave the mosh pit, you're supposed to sort of collectively help them clear a path so they can get out safely. Like everyone has responsibilities here.
Wow.
And I want to note some more specific examples of this etiquette and care that people shared on Twitter last year, right after Astroworld. These are personal examples, probably from Gen Xers, definitely in the scene, who wanted to share that mosh pits don't have to be nightmarish. In fact, they can be quite the opposite. And because this is sort of a heavier episode, I think these are sort of like sweet too. And yeah. Also, all of these examples involve shoes, which is fun. Okay, so shoe content. All right, sneaker night. Okay.
I didn't expect to talk about Vanessa Hudgens sneaker night during this episode, I gotta say. Did not expect that.
and yet here we are. Okay. So one person whose username was Cloudy Bloomer said, "Not to be corny, but it literally used to be that if you needed to tie your shoes, people would form a circle around you so you could bend down easily without getting hurt. And the second you wanted out, people would easily make a path for you to get out." It's great. Another user, Damn It Adrian N, said, "Bruh, in my first mosh pit, I lost a shoe. Cry laughing emoji, facepalm emoji. Everyone stopped and helped me look for it, formed a circle around me so I could put it back on, and then continued when I was all good." We see this like theme, the circle to protect people. Like, yeah, that's great. And lastly, Sister Ray 63 said, "Husband lost his shoe in a mosh pit. got hit with something someone else threw, turned out to be his shoe.
So like shoe stories,
they returned his shoe. So that's just sort of kind of illustrates the point that people look out for each other and like stay aware of each other. And there's sort of a communal element to it.
Right. Wow.
So yeah. So people may get a little bruised or banged up from moshing. It is like fiercely dancing, but no one is supposed to get seriously hurt, let alone die. It's actually quite possible and crucial to do this safely. But people are fallible, especially with different genres and younger concert goers who understand just like the raucous idea of mosh pits and likely also don't have much or any experience with their etiquette. That lack of knowledge and lack of consideration can make shows incredibly dangerous, which is why etiquette and protocols exist in the first place. And so the artists, their team and venue staff, security organizers, the artists themselves when they're on stage are a part of keeping crowds safe. Like it's part of their jobs, or if it isn't, that's the problem and it needs to be. They are meant to have show stop protocols in place and like underneath that, enough humility and decency to follow through with that. So that often starts with experienced security who know the safety etiquette of mosh pits or crowds more broadly, and can identify if something's going awry. And then they can and should catalyze a show stop, stop the music, make an announcement, have the artist pause and tell people to back up, loosen up, etc. And I'm pretty sure it's negligent at best and evil at worst to not do this, because it is possible. And that's my story about moshing.
This overview is amazing and like makes me want to join a safe, an actual mosh pit.
Me just too.
Yeah. How much people care for each other. Like it's very beautiful. Like that this one element that we're talking about as one of like the darkest elements of humanity. Of course, there's always a flip side to everything. And there's like the most beautiful parts are there too. I didn't know a lot of these rules before you taught them to us.
Mm-hmm. I didn't really know them until like the last couple years. And I have been in, not in like intense mosh pits at all, but I've been around people who just started moshing and it's like, this is so unpleasant. Just stop. Like no one is asking you to do this. And now I know, now I feel validated in that.
Yeah.
There's a time and a place and a designated space for it.
Right. And like even moshers would agree with you, mm-hmm. like would agree with that assessment. And to put a fine point on this piece, especially the last piece you just mentioned, Mimi, about some of these like show stop protocols, we're going to get into how that failed in part four. But I do want to put a fine point on the artists. So the artists definitely do have a responsibility to protect their fans. Something interesting that came from this was there were many videos and stories that kind of surfaced after this tragedy of moments when big artists stopped their shows when they saw any signs of an issue. There's a video of Adele in 2011 stopping her show when she notices a fan faint. There's a video of Billie Eilish who stopped the show when a fan was having an asthma attack. Side note, she said, I wait for people to be okay. And some people took that as shade to Travis Scott. Kanye West demanded an apology from her. She was like, no, I'm not going to apologize. Travis Scott liked Kanye's Instagram. So it was whatever. That's a different story. There's also a video of Linkin Park stopping when they noticed someone fell in a mosh pit. And we're actually going to play that clip here. I was going to summarize it. And then I was like, you know what? You guys should just hear it. So we're going to play this clip.
Hey, yo, hold up. Yo, we got a little problem up here.
Pick him up right now.
Everybody up. Sorry, you guys. We gotta look out for safety first, for real. Nobody gets hurt. That's number one.
Hey, yo.
We'll play the whole shit again if you guys get up, if you guys are all right. Okay, watch yourselves.
Hey, yo, man. We know we've been stressing all night about being cool, and this is the reason why. Let's go over it one more time. When someone falls, what do you do? When someone falls, what do you do? That's right, people. All right, are we ready to do this one more time?
We'll do it again. The whole thing.
No?
Hold up, hold up.
Well,
we
wait.
Still got people like passed out and shit.
Hey.
No, he's
just do what these guys do right here.
He's all right.
They'll take care of you, all right?
You guys gonna be cool? All right. Keep it safe out there, you guys. We want to have a good time. We gotta wait, though. All right, people on this side, are you ready? People in the back, are you ready? What about over here?
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what right now. I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what, I care more about every single one of you fucking people in the crowd than I do about this show.
Serious.
All right? I don't want to see any more kids coming over this thing. Not feeling too good, all right? Please take care of each other. If you see someone who needs help, you escort them to the front and let our gentlemen down here, they are your friends, let them take you and let them help you out, all right? Don't be a tough guy thinking that you're feeling sick and you just can hang out. All right, we ready?
People in here, are we ready?
Are we ready?
We all right?
Y'all got the sign, we ready?
We all right? Looks like we're all right.
All right, here we go. One more time.
It's giving humility and decency. Yeah.
Yeah, what do you guys think of the clip?
Well, first, RIP Chester Bennington.
Yes.
Sweet soul. This was also my peak caring about Linkin Park. Not caring about Linkin Park, but like, I liked this album. I was 10. I liked this album. My brother really liked it too. So I think that affected it. But when I look at this now, because I remember like watching their music videos at the time and looking back at it now as an adult, I'm like, this band was, you know, these guys are in their like early to mid 20s at this concert. And so any ageism is like, check this out. Like these guys are very young. Yeah. And now that we have some distance from it, like they continued to sort of operate this way for the rest of the band's existence. Like they, you know, this isn't sort of the only time. And I just thought it was very sweet, very moving, and exactly what should happen when the crowd is communicating that something is off, or even if you have an inkling that something might be off.
Yeah, it just shows that like not everything has to be like you can pause the moment and restart again. Cause I feel like artists are like afraid of losing the energy or whatever they have. So they're like, don't want to pause or don't want to like stop or whatever, but that like you can, and it's okay. And you can restart.
Yeah.
And no one will be mad at you.
No, I think my favorite part. Well, I think my number one favorite part was when they had everybody chant like the call and response of the rules that like made me cry. Mm-hmm. But my other favorite part was when they were like, are we ready to go? And then people are like, no, we're not ready. Yeah. And they're like, oh, okay. Well then we won't get started again.
Yeah. And they're like, look, we'll do the whole thing over
when
we're ready.
Yeah.
Because they know that like
as important as this.
Right. Nothing's as important. And they know that they can just take a beat and restart. And it'll be better than if you continue performing while people are in distress.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, that was a great example. Thank you for pulling that one.
Yeah. I was going to just put a few seconds in. And then I was like, you know what? Like, I know it's a little long, but there's a lot here. There's a lot to unpack. I do want to muddy the waters a little bit about Travis specifically, just real quick, just to add to the confusion. So there are some videos, as Travis said, there's a video specifically of like, it's just about over a minute and Travis does stop the show. He's like, stop. Like, is something going on? And he does what he said in his words earlier. He like thinks that everything's fine. He thinks that everything got figured out. Listen, there's an ambulance in the crowd. It's unclear what he thinks is happening or how bad he thinks it is. And I think honestly, I tried to like figure it out and I couldn't. And I was like, you know what? We'll probably never really know how much Travis like should have done what Linkin Park did. Well, he should have done what Linkin Park did, but it's unclear how much he knew. And there was another video. I couldn't tell. I think it was the same pause. So people were sharing this video as proof that he was like, did the right thing. But I actually thought it was a little damning. Basically what he does is he says, hey, can someone help this person? There's someone passed out. And he tells people to back up. So that's all great. And some of his fans are using that video saying like, look, here's proof he did something. But here's what he does that's different than Linkin Park. He literally starts singing like 5 seconds right after. He's like, someone has passed out. And it's like, Travis, just hold on. So that was their kind of like redemption clip. And I was watching it and I was like, I don't know if this is as redemptive as people think. And like the footage cuts to someone carrying a person above the crowd who is completely limp. And I actually don't know if that's someone who's dead. I just don't. Maybe the research exists. I just couldn't find it. So the whole thing is like really confusing and just overall not great. And I think the takeaway of this is shout out to Chester Bennington.
Yeah. Shout out to the boys of Linkin Park. I agree. I agree with both parts. I think that we don't know and may never know exactly how much he knew or could see while he was performing. But like we don't know if how much he understood the gravity of the situation, but starting again after 5 seconds, 5 seconds is quite a short amount of time. In fact, 5 seconds just passed since I said 5 seconds. So
I didn't time it. It might not have been 5 seconds. It might have been a metaphorical 5 seconds. I'm sorry, but I think it was pretty much five seconds.
Still, no, the way you like reenacted it though, I mean, that's way too, like you need to take a beat and a beat. You need to take a minute at least, I think. Yeah. Cause if someone has passed out, then you don't know what else could be going on. And you also need to like give them time and the people around them to help them get out. Like what? Yeah. I think that is actually more damning than him like maybe not noticing anything. Maybe not. I don't know.
I don't know either, but I know what you mean.
Cool.
So as we've been alluding to, there are a lot of other factors that contributed to all of this. So it's our final section, part four. I called this design errors, which sounds a little like stupid, but it's like, I'm just trying to say that the mistakes were not all accidents. Like literally things went wrong. But they went according to their plan. And I feel like it's important to say that. So that's why I'm calling them design errors, which makes it sound like, oh, like you picked the wrong curtains for the shape of your windows or whatever.
Planning errors, blunders.
Great. Planning blunders.
That just rolls off the tongue.
Love it.
Yeah.
Planning blunders. Okay. So let's talk about the features that contributed to this disaster. Now, as I mentioned at the top, profit and budget is easy to blame, and it's an important element here. But I don't think it's sufficient, because mostly I think blame is, as we've talked about, it's just like the wrong paradigm. Like we need to interrogate all the elements of human decision-making that contributes to something like this. So I want to share 6 elements of human error. The first 2 elements to name, we've already covered, so we're not going to talk about them again. 1 is artist responsibility, and 2 is mosh etiquette and people taking care of each other. Eki, take us to the third.
Yes, the third element is Live Nation, the entity charged with designing and implementing all logistics of the event, including physical structures and security protocols. Interestingly, this element is very relevant this month. I don't know if you attempted, but the merging of Live Nation and Ticketmaster made getting Taylor Swift tickets really hard. Antitrust law is suddenly the talk of the pop music town. If you were paying attention and you listened to this podcast, you probably tried to get tickets to the Eras Tour. Interestingly, in December 2021, a year ago, members of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform wrote a letter to Live Nation being like, shut the fuck up, you bitch. No, they said that reports indicate that security and medical staff were inexperienced or ill-equipped to deal with mass injuries. Some attendees stated that the placement of barricades made it difficult to escape. Experts have stated that AstroWorld Festival organizers failed to heed warning signs.
Okay, here's a fourth element. Planning. There were many protocols put in place in advance. There were security firms hired. If you're interested in learning more about this, there is in-depth research done about what was planned and whether or not those plans were followed. What's notable is the lack of planning for Crowd Crush. In an article in LA Times, concert safety consultant Paul Wertheimer said about the plans, quote, "What caught my attention is there's no mention of crowd management of the audience in front of the stage. It's not even addressed. Neither is moshing, crowd surfing, or stage diving. Neither do the terms crowd crush, crowd surge, crowd collapse, or panic appear anywhere." There are really horrible stories that we don't need to repeat here, but we'll link in the show notes from concert attendees with medic training who tried to help and who found the people charged with emergency medical treatment embarrassingly, heartbreakingly ill-prepared. They didn't have training, they didn't have equipment, and it's hard to read.
Yeah, it's like brutal. And something else that that just came to mind for me just now, like drawing certain connections, Mimi, with your point earlier about this, the show stop protocols. So all these safety and security protocols, of which there were many because they expected AstroWorld to be kind of like hectic, were about like people not getting in without tickets, or like people like only being in the VIP section if they actually paid for it, right? It's like, it's about that kind of management. And not about like this huge liability you see right here. So that's where it's like, it doesn't even matter if Travis Scott could have seen something, because it's very clear that staff throughout the arena were seeing something and they didn't know what to do. So that takes us to the fifth element, which is diffusion of responsibility and rigid but unclear chains of command. So there are typical crowd control protocols that we've explored a little bit that exist in other concerts that weren't followed. So there's an example from Steve Allen of Crowd Safety, a UK-based consultancy. Side note, I'm learning all about like, there's like crowd safety experts and crowd science. Like, who knew? All these people we're quoting today, I've never heard of their professions in my life. Anyway, Steve Allen says, events should have, quote, trained crowd spotters with noise-canceling headsets who are in direct communication with someone in close proximity to the performer who's willing to temporarily stop the event if there's a life-threatening situation. That could be a crowd surge, structural collapse, fire, or something else. End quote. That sounds so obvious, but again, you have to pay that person, and that person has to get in your budget. So there are stories, some are verified, some are not, so take any of this with a grain of salt, but there are stories of people asking event staff for help and being told it wasn't their job to help. The Houston police said this too, that like the buck didn't stop with them. So again, we always have to ask ourselves, what the fuck are police for? They're like, well, it wasn't really sure if it was our job. There's only so much they could do. I'm going to share a quote from the LA Times article that we have linked in our show notes. And the quote also quotes 21-year-old Shauna Faith McCarty, who was there. So this is a quote from the article. She yelled to a man who pulled her up. Eventually, she was able to get to the back of the crowd. A man pulled her over a guardrail, and she spotted a cameraman on an elevated platform, eyes fixed to the stage. She climbed a ladder and pointed to the hole, telling him people were dying. He told her to get off the platform. Another man grabbed her arm and told her he would push her off the 15-foot platform if she didn't get down. I was in disbelief, McCarty wrote. Here are two people that could actually do something, had the power to do something, cut the camera, call in backup, pause something. They did nothing, end quote. So it's just like really unclear why it literally wasn't shut down. Most damning is the police had officially declared it a mass casualty incident, which how long did people have to be dying already for that to happen? So they already knew people were dying. 40 minutes later after that happened, after it was declared a mass casualty incident, only then was the concert stopped. 40 minutes. It's just nuts.
Yeah, it's deeply upsetting when it leads to our last and our sixth element, physical structures. It seemed the metal barricades at the front of the stage contributed to the crush. Experts have proposed many different designs, including smaller pens with better pathways for personnel to get to.
Yep.
So those are the elements we wanted to name. Of course, there are probably more, and they also reinforce each other. This really was a perfect storm.
All right. So those are some of the things that contributed to this tragedy. And we've reached the end of our episode. To close, we want to send love to the people who died and were hurt at Astroworld, also in Seoul, Korea, just this year, and at Hillsborough, and all victims of mass casualty events, of which there are too many. We hope exploring what happened and what happened after has given you more information to be a smart consumer of post-tragedy media. And we promise that our next episode is a fun one. It may or may not be about first American Idol winner who is still the actual idol of our hearts. So don't worry, lighthearted topics will commence in 2 short weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
There's one thing America got right.
What'd you say?
There's one thing America got right. And it's season 1 of American Idol.
Yeah. And that was it. That was the first and the last time.
Yeah. That's beautiful, actually. Yeah.
Beautiful. So that's our show, everyone. Of course, it's not the end of the conversation. We can't wait to hear what you think. And if you have a second and you want to support us, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes or your podcast app of choice. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the B-Sides podcast. We want to connect with you.
Check out the show notes to find our Instagram, Twitter, and join our Facebook group where you can link up with us and other progressives who love pop.
Please take a minute to subscribe, rate, and review if you haven't already, and consider supporting the B-Sides on Patreon. Until the next time we cut to the feeling, I'm Mimi.
I'm Becky.
I'm Hannah.